the most challenging job I've ever done in my life, like comfortably. Ultimately, from a talent perspective, you're dealing with people, and my job is to make them commercially viable or to future-proof them as content creators. So it's finding brand partnerships for them that will pay them for their services, whether it's at an event, whether it's to post something on TikTok. You're as all in or all out as they want you to be.
As somebody who manages some of the biggest talent we have in the country, What does it take to make it as a content creator?
You need to very quickly...
Behind every great content creator, there's a talent manager. Do you have what it takes to be a talent manager? If you think you do, you're going to want to listen to this episode because today's guest, Hayden, talks to us about all things talent. From content creation to managing some of the country's leading talent, he talks about it all. And guys, you know what to do. If you're enjoying the podcast, make sure to like, subscribe, share, comment. It does wonders for the show. Now enjoy. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk to your best friends in the aim of inspiring you to take action and find the career of your dreams. Today we've got a good one, people. I'm talking to my best friend, the talent manager, Hayden. How you doing, bro?
Good, mate. Good. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We like to start with a little icebreaker. Mm-hmm. What did you want to be growing up?
There's a long list. I'm a very, very indecisive person and have been for the longest time. So when I was really young, I wanted to be a paramedic.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Saving lives.
Saving lives, exactly. But that didn't last long. I wanted to deviate from the obvious answer, which was to be a professional footballer.
Yeah,
everyone says it, but obviously I did. Played to a fairly high standard, which a lot of the people that I manage are quite surprised at because they don't see me play that often. But that was the dream. And then, yeah, kind of in between that, I actually wanted to be an author as well.
Okay.
Yep. So I used to love writing.
A man of many words.
Man of many, many, many words. Yeah. So I think I might have overshot it with that one. But so yeah, between the three of those, like at various different points in my childhood, like that's what I wanted to do.
Okay. So I heard there paramedic, I heard footballer, I heard author, but you've ended up as a talent manager.
Mm-hmm.
Take us way back, bro. So like, yeah, what was your education like? And can you talk us through your career up until this point?
Yeah, so I suppose I'll start with sick form. So that's kind of when I started knuckling down, I think, and kind of like took my education a bit more seriously outside of football and realized like I was really into like English. So I did my A levels in English Lit, did business as well, and then went to university, studied English Lit and creative writing.
But, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
The author dream was live and kicking.
Yeah, mate, I was bang on it. You know, Shakespeare, Chaucer, everything. But yeah. Yeah, uni was quite an explosive experience. Nothing too bad. I mean, it's just the classic, you know, you move away from home. Like I was on the football society. It was very lads, lads, lads.
I was exactly the same.
You get it, right? Wednesday nights. That's what you
live for a Wednesday.
Yeah, that was exactly. So it kind of derailed me a little bit. And I think I was kind of, so I had kind of like two different friendship groups back home. Like one, you know, grew up in Kent and they were very kind of like, you know, they wanted to be at home and that sort of thing. And then the other group of lads that I was with were all sort of like lived in London, you know, actors, models, musicians.
Oh, wow, okay.
So I sat somewhere in the middle. So I kind of went to uni to kind of figure out, or to kind of prolong the period that I had to figure out what I wanted to do. So yeah, that ended. Obviously I'm not an author, but yeah, mate, when I left university, I lived at home for a little bit. And obviously I used to write stories. I used to write music as well. And a friend of mine from that London friendship group was a signed artist in London. So he was like, look, move back to London, like come and get in the mix with me, like meet the right people. And then I ended up being his tour manager for a little bit.
Okay.
Just because I had a driving license. I think it was quite cavalier back then. It probably still is now. So yeah, between sort of doing that, I obviously needed to make a little bit more money on the side. So I was a promoter around Soho and Mayfair for a bit. So in the nightlife scene, and then I worked retail for a bit as well. So I was doing three jobs, like proper grafting. And again, like at the moment in time, I was in my early 20s. So, you know, it was nice. I enjoyed it, but it came a point where I was like, shit, you need to kind of rein it in a little bit, but it was really good. It was a good experience in terms of networking and meeting people, and that sort of, you know, gateway into the creative industries through different means, I suppose. So once I packed that in, I worked for LucasAid in a sort of like sales and marketing role. That was when, I guess, influencer marketing was really starting to come to the fore. So it was going to events, it was putting products in people's hands, you know, that sort of thing. And God, yeah, it's a long road.
Yeah, mate, I'm thinking back. So you were at LucasAid.
Yeah.
And would you say like that was kind of your first like corporate job?
Yeah, I would. It was quite weird. It was a lot of days spent by yourself. So we would get given kind of like a list of places that we needed to go. Mm-hmm. So it might be like gyms, it might be leisure centers, and it would, you know, the crescendo would be there'd be some sort of event in the evening that you would go to. And I think I had a bit of a propensity for it. I was quite good at it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was fairly corporate, but not really. But I've always been quite specific about the jobs that I've done in order to, you know, I've never wanted to park myself behind a desk. I think I knew that quite early on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, LucasAid was an experience. And then after that, I worked for a chain of like nightclubs in sort of central London, sort of selling event packages to people. So again, you know, it was a sales job, but you were kind of, you're sort of still in the mix a little bit, which was quite interesting. And I left there and then worked in a sort of like offshoot of what Soho House essentially was. So my job was to go into sort of London and surrounding areas and find people that just did cool stuff and go, right, look, we have an environment here for you to, you know, create, connect with people, etc. So I just used to go out and just go to events, and you know, it's interesting. I was listening to your podcast with my good friend Sammy, and he was talking about going to events solo. God, I used to do it every single day. Yeah, mate. It used to stress me out, but you get so used to it and you become so accustomed to it, you just put the mask on.
So as somebody who's done a lot of solo eventing, what would be your key piece of advice to somebody to help break the ice and network with somebody?
It's cliche, just back yourself, you know, like don't, you might only get the opportunity to speak to a person in that room once, obviously like first impressions as well. So leave your ego at the door and leave your inhibitions at the door to an extent. And obviously watch how much you're drinking, because a lot of these places, they're free bars. So you have to have fun, but don't overcook it.
I like that. So you were doing that. Apart from the events, were there any other way you were sourcing people for this offshoot?
It was my first real experience with LinkedIn. So this was in end of 2018, start of 2019, which obviously is coming into like a, was it the other way around, 2019 coming into 2020, sorry. So it was an interesting time, obviously, of what was going on in the world, which I'll sort of get onto. But it was LinkedIn, obviously, as well. Like the place that I worked for was traditionally musicians, theatre, that sort of thing. So it was quite old school. So I wanted to try and change it. So my whole thing was to try and find people that were sort of, you know, between the ages of 20 and 30 that had a little bit of expendable income, but like the price for a membership wasn't loads. Like you'd spend it on a round or two with the boys on a night out.
Yeah.
So, but I wanted to look into content creators. You know, you could see that what they were doing, and obviously like they reached so many different audiences, and I just felt like that was what we needed to be doing. I was met with a little bit of resistance, but you know, that's kind of where we were positioning it. And then we went into lockdown, didn't we?
Yeah.
And that's kind of when everything really sort of changed for me, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned there that everything changed. Let's dive into it. What happened?
In the period of time that I was at the members club, I got very comfortable, because you're ultimately working there, you're going out there, and it supplements your personal life. So we went into lockdown, and I think we all kind of knew what was coming. So ultimately the club ended up closing. I think my last day was end of July in 2020, and we went into lockdown in March, and we got told that we were going into what's called a consultancy period in April, I think. So we had a sister club in LA. That whole thing got locked off overnight because the laws in America are different.
They're crazy.
So they were knackered. They were knackered. So we had a bit of time, and so I was sort of thinking, I was like, crap, like what am I going to do? Like, you know, realistically, I mean, how old was I at this point? Maybe like 27. I don't know. Time's distorted at the moment.
Yeah.
So I was like, whatever I do, it needs to, like, I've got to make it count. And I think even, you know, even as cavalier as my 20s were, there was always a part of me that every job that I did gave me the sort of relevant experience to do what I'm doing now, even though I didn't necessarily know that's what I was going to end up doing. So you were looking at it objectively going, right, what industries aren't absolutely on their knees at the moment? And obviously everyone's on their phones, everyone's on the computers. So, you know, content creators, or, you know, what was more commonly used then, influencers, were thriving. You know, it had to be a little bit more creative. And obviously, you know, brands, you know, the sort of brands that are activating and out at home had to figure out how to reach audiences that are all stuck at home. So I was like, okay, right, what am I good at? So I've identified that. I've obviously had the experience with you sort of like, you know, meeting people and managing relationships. So I was like, you know, and looking back to when I used to work in music and stuff, it was like, okay, let me look at managing content creators. So I was really just, I just dialed in on it and was like, this is what I'm going to do. And ultimately, my CV was quite colourful, I think, back then. So to try and convince these agencies at a point where, you know, a lot of the population are looking for a job, to get them to roll the dice on you was quite difficult. I mean, I could tell you stories.
please do tell us stories. But yeah, my question is, like, ultimately somebody did roll the dice on you. So what do you think it is, yeah, to your point of, you know, sharing some stories, that helps set you apart?
So I think I learned a lot about myself in terms of like tenacity. So ultimately, like, I was quite lucky in terms of the redundancy pay that I got at that time, because I didn't have a job from July till January the next year.
Yeah.
And I was getting stressed. So but I'd identified a list of sort of like talent agencies. So I had pot one of, you know, the gold standard of what I wanted. And then pot two was, you know, businesses that are on the, not periphery of it, but were aligned with it, that could, you know, okay, it might not be the thing, but it's going to help me get to the thing.
Yeah.
And then I had pot three, which was, don't be an idiot, and if you need a job, take the job.
I love that.
So yeah,
just to dive in there before you continue, pot one, pot two, pot three, how is it you went about building those lists? Because I'm just thinking about the listener right now who potentially wants to get into potentially managing content creators. Maybe they don't even know where to start to understand what kind of agencies are out there. Was it LinkedIn? What resources were you using?
It's a combination. Like, I don't want to always default to LinkedIn, although like you cannot underestimate how good that is as a platform. And like the best way to utilize LinkedIn, especially in the first instance when you're trying to speak to someone, just don't try and sell them something. Just chat to them like a normal person. Like, you know,
slide into the DMs.
I don't know. But for me, it kind of built up over time. So you use LinkedIn, and you know, I'm on the internet. You know, I grew up in, you know, I'm a millennial, so I was in that in between period where like the internet wasn't a frightening thing to me, but also like, you know, I'm not like some of the kids now. But I knew where to look. So for example, I follow a lot of content creators, and then those content creators have links in their bio and management and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So you can figure it out quite easily if you obviously know where to look. So if you want to work in a sort of space, you need to be in the space. So yes, LinkedIn is good, but if you want to be managing content creators, they're on Instagram and they're on TikTok, and there are, you know, there's a breadcrumb trail that leads to who's pulling the strings, basically.
Yeah, I love that. That's the key takeaway that I wanted. But sorry, I cut you up. Go back to telling the story. So
I applied at a lot of talent management agencies, and you know, I think with my combined perceived lack of experience and just the job market being just battered, it was taking quite a lot of time, and I was getting, you know, you've not got this experience or whatever. Do you know what? Like, it's there was a couple of instances with interviews that I did, and like, I either didn't get it or I went, I'm just going to turn it down because it will sort itself out.
Yeah.
So anyway, fast forward to the turning point. I applied for a role with a talent management agency, quite a very well-respected one, one that's still doing very good things now, and the founder and I are still very good friends as a result of what happened. And it was a talent assistant role. So considering my position now, obviously I'm a talent manager, but I also am the head of the sports department at the agency that I work for. And this was, you know, what was it? It's 4 years ago. So the founder sort of said to me, he's called me and said, "What? Like, I'm so curious as to like why you've applied for this role, because even though you haven't got the experience, it's so junior." And I was like, I don't want to come across as I know better, but I was like, give me the job and I will, I will show you why and I'll get promoted very quickly. So I didn't get it. But ultimately, he said we hired internally. It's quite often the case. It's probably worth noting to the audience that people before they will, obviously he did advertise the job, but they want to look within. People understand the company processes. They might already have relationships with the talent. So it does make sense.
So on that, you mentioned the fact that there was a talent assist role. If somebody's trying to do internal mobility, what's another job where you could get your foot in the door into a company and then pivot to become a talent assistant?
Yeah, I mean...
Is it just literally any department?
It depends. So I'll kind of elaborate on it a little bit more and get onto my next steps. But working your way up is obviously the best way to go. And I don't want to be a hypocrite because I think there is no, there's no... You'll know when you're ready to do it. You could be 20, you could be 30, you could be 40. It doesn't matter. But the earlier you do it, obviously, the more it benefits you. Because if you're at university... So, for example, when I was at uni, when I was at school, this job didn't really exist in its current guise. There are a lot of words for what I do. One other word is agent. So people think Jerry Maguire screaming down the phone.
I think Ari Gold from Entourage.
There you go. Yeah, so yeah, exactly. My boy, yeah, exactly. So there are connotations with it. But it wasn't there. Whereas if I was at school now, you can see it. I mean, it's why there's so many people becoming content creators now. It's easy access. Everyone's got a phone, for example. So, if you're at school and you've got a phone, you're creating content, one of your boys is filming you, all of a sudden you've got your manager and you've got talent there already. You might not even know it yet. To answer your question, obviously my issue is I had a ticking clock on me. And obviously those aren't really ideal conditions to be making a really big decision like that.
And you would say the ticking clock is the fact that you're a little bit older and that you've lost.
Not that I'm a little bit older, more the fact that we were in lockdown. I didn't have a job. I was running out of money.
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to be clear.
Yeah, but getting old is not. I'm 31 now, and you'd think so by this point, but I'm comfortable in the best position in my career that I've been. In terms of financially and reputationally, and just in terms of how I feel. But that's been. That's been quite a long process and probably, I know we spoke before, you sort of mentioned he must've had a different route into it than maybe Sammy did. My route's been unconventional. So I didn't get the role, but I then applied for a job at a influencer marketing agency. So an influencer marketing agency is an agency that basically is contracted by brands to then reach out to the influencers or content creators and say, we have a campaign, you've got to do this, it's for this product, et cetera, et cetera. And then they will manage that campaign. So that was my adjacent step.
Yeah.
And the agency was called Scene Connects, and they were very, very good for my career. My old boss is a woman called Sedge Beswick, who I did the Madfest panel with.
Shout out, Sedge.
Shout out, Sedge.
Met you, but get pleasure on to it. Meet you.
I applied and interviewed for a new, basically a business development role within the business. So it was to go out to brands and basically say, this is what we do. If you give us your budget, we'll deal with it. It wasn't really what I wanted to be doing. But again,
foot in the door.
You look at it and go, I'm going to be in a good agency. They work with good brands. They work with good talent. And I'm seeing the commercial side of it. So I understand what people's buying signs are, when they buy, what sort of content creators they go for, what is getting negotiated. So I've kind of got that in my back pocket.
So it's kind of not lucky, but it's a good role for exposure understanding.
It was great. And Danny, the guy from the other agency, he coached me how to succeed in that interview, So it was really good. And these are relationships that I have to this day that are very good. So it is, just because you don't get something or the timing doesn't work out, it's good to, this industry is all, it really is who you know.
Okay, I love that. And just I want to dive into two things you've said there. First was, you said that Danny helped coach you to be successful in the interview. Mm-hmm. To anybody who's listening to this and is potentially applying to biz dev roles, mm-hmm. What's your key piece of advice to make sure they ace the interview?
do research before you actually start reaching out to other people and asking for their two cents. Just like understand the business that you're getting into and figure out what a vulnerability is. Mm-hmm. So mine was always led with sport. You know, I understand it. And the business that I was going into was a very sort of fashion led agency. Worked with, you know, eBay, several other sort of brands in and around that space. The sport was something that was lacking. So mm-hmm. obviously there's a lot of money in it. So figure out where they're not struggling, but where they might need value.
Yep.
And also identify, just you're in this weird in-between bit where you are, it's not corporate, but like a business development role, like you are judged on the numbers, right? Yeah. But then also be a bit creative, because they will ask you things like, how are you going to cut through the mess? Because if you're, you know, head of business development or whatever it is, and you're reaching out to Joe Bloggs, who works for Nike, as a marketing director,
I used to do biz dev. Half the time they've got a gatekeeper and they don't even let you
get
through.
Slapped down. Yeah. So you have to be creative. Yeah. I used to turn up to people's offices. This is way back. I mean, yeah, a bit of a faux pas now, but like, yeah. But also, you know, just you have to. You can't, like I said, your people's first experience of you seldom is successful when you're immediately trying to sell them something. Yep. And it's hard, because it's easy for me to say now, I've got a fairly decent presence on LinkedIn and social media, and I've obviously got my name out there a little bit. So people, I find it a bit easier now. But
everybody starts from somewhere.
Yeah,
though,
right? You have to. So I think even for the interview, I'd written an article that I published on LinkedIn about how, I think it was like heritage brands in football can work with content creators. So I was like, I've written this, and I, you know, in my outreach, I might include it or something like that. Or it's a, you know, it's another touch point for people that I've added. Might be, oh, this guy, he knows this stuff. He hasn't just gone, you know, and written an email and copied and pasted it. Cause you've got to be, I mean, it's a hard one to balance, you know, when you've got the whip being cracked on you and you obviously want to make money, but you know, people aren't stupid. I get emails now, I look at it and if I can tell it's a copy and paste job, it's going in a bin.
100%, yeah. 100%. So you did the biz dev role. Mm. Talk us through where we go next. So how long do you do that? And then, yeah, how do you start transitioning?
The thing is, so at Connects, I was there from January 2021 till August, so it wasn't long, but like, I'm still very friendly with a lot of people. It felt like I was there for a lot longer,
yeah,
and I learned a lot there, and I think I left at the right time, because I was getting a bit weary, I think, in the role, and I'm quite a twitchy person. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to move around, so I got offered the opportunity to go to a creative agency and work on partnerships, so you had closer proximity to talent. So there was, I had that, and then it was another influencer marketing agency came in for me. What I actually think is important to say, by the way, this wasn't by accident. So I was lucky. So Connects had a production element of the business. So we could, you know, use the resources, a bit like this, what we're doing now. So I used to do like series of videos. Okay. They're probably still on my LinkedIn now. They make me cringe. But like, it's you're out there and people can see how you speak and how you conduct yourself and, you know, where your head's at. So it was kind of off the back of that. And I was flirting with the idea of leaving. You know, someone came into the business that I was, you know, we weren't on it, you know, that happens. But like, I was a bit like, this just isn't going to work for me anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, I ended up with, fortunately, with two job offers from two slightly different businesses. And again, another really crucial decision in my career, because the safe bet would have been to go to the other influencer marketing agency. They had a very good reputation, very big, very well established. And I knew people that were there. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, you hear things, right? Or you go to a smaller business that gives you a little bit more proximity to what you want to do. It might not work, but you rolled a dice on it. And I did, and learned what I needed to learn. I think I was there for, God, it can't have been longer than 7 months. And then I was like, right, I feel like now is a good time. And I'm going to try and, you know, get myself into the talent game. Okay. So by the time I'd started where I am now, I think I interviewed. So I worked with Fancied already. I worked for an agency called Alpha Talent Group, and have done for 2 years now. But I had two other job offers from two different agencies on the table, and all were very fairly similar in terms of like the salary and, you know, commission structure and so on and so forth. But I guess there were two reasons why I joined where I am now.
Yeah.
The first being, again, you don't just blindly go into an agency. Like, you have to go in somewhere where you can make your mark. And I'll explain what I mean on that in a little bit. But I looked at the roster and I looked at, you know, the credibility factor and obviously like where I could fit in. So they had a sports division. It was very, very different to what it is now. Mm-hmm. But ultimately I felt like I could go in there and I'd just be Hayden, get on with it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There would be not necessarily interference. Whereas I think a lot of agencies get very caught up in an aesthetic or certain vanity metrics or whatever it might be. And mm-hmm. it's not me saying I don't like people interfering with my stuff, but you know, my experience has told me if you've got a feeling about someone, like go with it. And I think sometimes a lot of agencies make their talent managers run through hoops or go through certain processes that realistically I don't think should be there in order to sign people.
Yeah.
The second point is they were efficient.
Yeah.
They wanted me. I knew they wanted me. And they moved quickly.
Yeah. And I was going to say, like, with job interviews, it's not just you selling yourself. Mm. It is companies selling themselves to you as well. So I think efficiency is key. So it's great to hear that.
And that's the thing, you know, like a big part of what I've been doing recently since I've kind of really got a stranglehold on my job is I look at the instance that I had with Danny and how he helped me. So I get so many young, you know, guys and girls that reach out to me on LinkedIn, and wherever I can, I'll help them.
Yeah.
It might not help, but I'm like, right, do this, say this. Like, when you're one of my friends recently interviewed with a talent agency, he's never been a talent manager before, he just got offered the job, and I said, ask them this, question them on this. If they haven't mentioned that, that's a red flag. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want to try and help people. And I think I've done a lot of interviews, and especially now I understand this industry enough to know, you know, what's good and what you might need to look out for.
I love that. We're going to get into the interviews, but before we do, you mentioned the fact that you work for Alpha Talent.
Yeah.
First and foremost, what is Alpha Talent? What do they do overall?
We manage about between sort of like 30 to 40 content creators from various different backgrounds. Some of them are television, some of them, you know, a lot of them spawned out of, you know, lockdown and TikTok and, you know, what can I do to pass the time? And obviously sport. I lead the sports division, which consists of, I mean, loads of them now, but under my direct management, I manage 10. 8 of them are football, one of them's tennis, and one of them's in the fitness space.
Wow.
As well as running the sports department. So it's punchy, but it's good.
And in terms of like your day to day and like a week, like, yeah, what is it that you're doing with the talent, with the department? Can you just give us some like highlights of what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, we're a small agency and it's very all encompassing. So my job is to make them commercially viable or to future proof them as content creators. So it's finding brand partnerships for them that will pay them for their services, whether it's at an event, whether it's to post something on TikTok. I mean, we've just come off of the back of the Euros. All 8 of my football content creators were there in some capacity, working with various different brands, like from Coca-Cola, you know, Panini, you know, Adidas. Like we had a very good presence there. So it's making sure that they're seen at those moments as well. You get various different types of managers. Like I want myself and I want the business to make sure that we're doing as much as we can for them. Mm-hmm. I think some managers, and I get it, it's a numbers game. It's, if this isn't going to make me money, I don't want to know. You know, I've heard so many sort of stories about talent complaining about managers saying, you know, they want to do this and you know,
as in forcing people to do stuff just to get the bag.
Yeah, there's that. And ultimately the decision's always with the talent. Like we're there to advise, and sometimes it burns me when they say no, but it's their career. Yeah. And ultimately, like, you know, I think I'm, you know, steadfast and like headstrong enough to know what a good offer is or what makes sense for them. So when you look at talent, you identify obviously what they want to do. Why are you in it? Make sure they're very, very honest with you. You know, I want to make money, or I want to, you know, pay off my mum and dad's mortgage, or sick. I want fame. I mean, some of the stuff that people have said to me. Jesus, God.
We'll save that for another episode.
Oh my God, yeah. But you know what? Like, fair enough. Like, everyone's,
I think honesty is the best policy, right? Because then at least you know.
Everyone's different. But I like, One thing I've learned is to really lay the gauntlet down to people and just be like, look, be honest with me.
Yeah.
Because that's what you'll get in return. And it's a partnership. You know, your success means my success and so on and so forth.
So once you've understood what it is they're looking for from the partnership,
mm-hmm.
what is it you then go and do? You're talking to brands, like how have you built up the relationships with your Coca-Colas, with your this, with your that? Is it just like time in the space? Is it some of that BD stuff where you've actually gone out, reached out, opened doors?
It's everything, you know. Yeah. I look at it like this, right? So even right now, we're halfway through the year. We've just got back from the Euro, so the dust has settled a little bit. So we're working on everyone's sort of end of year strategies and, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 5 year plans. So obviously a lot of that will be spearheaded from me because I know what brands are out there, what big cultural moments are coming up that we need to look for example, like the Women's Euros next year. We're even looking at the World Cup coming in 2026 already.
Yeah.
Christmas, Black Friday, whatever it might be. But for them, it's like, who do you want to work with?
Yeah.
Why? What would you do? In terms of your own brand, where do you see yourself going? Like, what are your core pillars? You know, what makes you tick? If it's football, like what in football? Is it? Mm-hmm. Is it going to games? Is it freestyling? Is it connecting with fans?
I might start a new job. I want to go to games.
Yeah, but like, so we can build, because ultimately, like you asked me earlier, right? What did you want to be when you grow up? Stop me if you think I'm wrong. No one grew up and said, I want to work with a brand.
Yeah.
You want to be the brand. Yep. It's a means to an end, and it's a very good means to an end. And there's some really, really good brands out there that we align ourselves with and that really understand the synergy between, you know, the creator, the brand, and their audience. I think there's still quite a lot left to be desired about it. Mm-hmm. So I challenge all of my guys. I'm like, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do on a day-to-day basis. I might go to meetings. I might email. I might use your statistics or your current portfolio of content to pitch you, and I'm going to need something in return. Because neither of us need to be sitting idly. So if you want to work with, let's say it's Coca-Cola, and if you've turned around and gone, listen, gaffer, like, we've been trying to get Coca-Cola for 2 months and it's not happened. I'm like, well, why aren't you following them on Instagram?
Yeah.
You know, what? Like, you have to do... I always say it's fine margins, and they hate me for saying it all the time, but it's account management.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I'm going to do this, you do that, engage with their stuff, go to that event. Yeah, they might not pay you for it in the first instance, but let's get in amongst it. And obviously it's my job with a brand when it's a free thing, whether it's gifting or an event or over the Euros, a quite tricky one to navigate is tickets, because you would never, I wouldn't want to stand in the way of someone to get a ticket to the Euros, for God's sake.
Yeah.
But you lose a bit of your leverage every time it happens.
Yeah, 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 of course.
So you have to be strategic. So my question obviously to brands in those instances is, what's the purpose of this? You know, is it a vanity thing? Are you just trying to fill a room with cool people? Or are you trying to build?
Is there an end goal?
Yeah. And you know, sometimes they'll bullshit you, or like they just won't be honest with you. But sometimes they'll be like, look, this is what we're doing. We're trying to build it out. Like, I'm sure you can understand, especially with challenger brands or brands that are very sort of just new to the industry. They haven't got loads and loads of money. So I asked them the question, right? If this was your business and you're asking for, you know, your creator's asking for X and you've never seen them with your product, are you going to give it to them?
Mm.
You're probably not. So you have to play the game.
Yep.
You have to play the game.
I've heard so much there. I think where I want to go with it next is, you've spoken about all the things you do for talent.
Mm-hmm.
To anybody who's looking at this and is thinking, you know what? I want to become a content creator.
Yeah.
I think like it's the hottest job, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And anyone, like you said, can do it because everyone has access to a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as somebody who manages some of the biggest talent we have in the country,
mm-hmm.
what does it take to make it as a content creator?
You need to very quickly ignore what you think people might think of you.
Mm.
If you are exposing yourself to... The first people you're exposing yourself to might be the 100 or 1,000 people that follow you, that you went to school with or that you worked with, that are going to go, what's Hayden doing?
Yeah, yeah.
What business has he got interviewing people outside of football stadiums? And then, and especially in sport and in football with how tribal it is. I mean, I've, you know, obviously part of my job is to engage with my talents stuff. You know, if you put on a comment, oh, I think Messi's better than Ronaldo, you're going to get battered for it.
Yeah.
So you have to have thick skin. You have to. It's very tribal. So you have to understand that you're opening yourself up to criticism, and it might not be nice, but you have, that's something you have to overcome. And again, with a good support network, whether it's management, whether it's your friends, because your friends have got to be behind you. And again, it's being honest with yourself about why you want to do it. So if you are looking at, you know, you're looking at like the Sidemen, or if you're looking at like Chunks, or if you're looking at someone like Els the Witch, like very successful people on YouTube, like YouTube's the platform that I consumed. Like, Christ, there was a period where I even thought about it. Not for me. But, you know, you go, well, what, why have they done it? Or like, what do I want? If you just want to be famous, like, cool, be honest with yourself. If you see it as a business, treat it like a business.
Yeah.
Get, you know, connect with people, you know, don't be afraid to DM people. Like, even people that I manage now, I'm like, you really don't understand like the value of your network sometimes. Like, these, you know, when we do collaborations with footballers, it's like, message them after the shoot. These boys are following you. They're young lads as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, you have to just, you have to just back yourself. You have to find a good blend, I think, between what works. So obviously speaking to a lot of the platforms, to TikTok as an example, like the reason why, using football as an example, you see a lot of videos that objectively look the same is because it's what does well.
It works.
That's what works, and you're encouraged to do that. So again, something I always challenge people to do is try and have an ace in the hole. So obviously do your thing and have your regular content, because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to upset the algorithm, but you have to every now and again be trying to do something original. And if it doesn't work, we'll park it. But you're going to need to do that, or you'll get left behind. Because again, using football as an example, it's so desirable, right? You like I said earlier, how many people say, I wanted to be a footballer? You look at it now, you can be a football content creator with less risk. You know, you can go out and have a drink with your friends, and you're not going to get hammered for it.
Yeah.
You can have, you know, if you get
it
to
looks like the best job in the world.
It is. I envy them, but I'm also so grateful that I'm on the ride with them as well, and that they've trusted me with it. And I love it as well, because I've got no right to work in foot. My when I applied for this job, it wasn't foot. You know, it wasn't. But that's kind of how I'm identified now.
Yeah. And just on that, like when it comes to talent specifically for Alpha, like what is it you guys are looking for? So we've spoken about what it takes to potentially make it as a content creator. When you guys are looking to sign someone, what are the key things you're looking out for to go, oh, you know what, they could do with a little Hayden.
Yeah, it's you know, again, as a small business, we've taken some time, I think, to align on it. And I think the nature of the business as well is, when you have, you know, you've got your business and then you've got your managers, they're an extension of it, but everyone's so different. And I think there was a period of time where perhaps we might have been doing things quite differently, but ultimately, like, what we all agree on is that we want to work with people that are just, they're consistent, and they're out there doing stuff. Like, you don't want to, you know, I've had instances in the past where I've made mistakes and perhaps signing people that just weren't putting the yards in. And again, like, you're going to get questions from them at the end of the month if they haven't made money, and you're going, you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Like, you have to, you know.
It's a two-way thing, right?
It is a two-way thing.
You know, the reason I say that is because, so I had a founder of a creative agency of like actors and stuff. And he said, yeah, the biggest misconception is that people, they get signed and they just expect the agency
to
do everything for you without doing any work. And he goes, no, you put in as much as...
You have to. Arguably, you have to work harder. You know, if you're trusting someone to take, you know, what is industry standard, 20% of what you earn, you've all got to be putting the yards in. Like, I want to make sure that I'm getting, you know, getting the best for you. And I want to obviously make sure that I'm not getting looked at the end of the month. But I want you to make sure that you're getting the most value out of it. Because I think what a lot of people say when they come to me, especially now, more often than not, they've had experiences with management. And there are a lot of agencies that are popping up. And I think it's great. But I think some of them haven't quite mastered the relationship between talent and manager. I think they look at talent as a commodity rather than as a person. And that's where you cannot do that.
Yeah.
You have to look at the person. You have to understand the person. And then only can you then begin to effectively pitch them and, you know, endorse them to brands, I think.
So just coming back to, like, you know, what we're looking at for talent, when you sign them, like, I'm just thinking, yeah, like they go to games, they create content. Are you also providing them with editors and this resource and that resource? Or is it, we get you your 80%, we keep 20, and then with their 80, you pay for your editors, you pay for this, you pay for that. How is it you help them?
Honestly, it's case by case. So like some of them, the sort of content they do is contingent on having an editor that they might have hired or that we might have sourced for them. And ultimately we're in a very good position where we have a really good network of editors, videographers, you know, you name it sort of thing, even people to, you know, accountants and everything. Like that's the thing, we want to make sure that we're providing the whole service to you, not just saying, here's a job, do you want to do the job? Like we're managing them. We want this to be long term. And then, you know, some of them are a little bit more lo-fi. It's just, you know, I'm going to take my phone, I'm going to vlog, and I'm going to go to a game. Cool. But it's just outlining what you need. And again, it's our job to communicate that to a brand. And it's the most important thing for us is to make sure that we're interpreting a brief adequately and that the brand has understood what they've actually asked for. Because I've seen some terrible briefs and you flag it and you go, I don't think you thought about this. And they go, no, it's fine. And you do it. And they go, well, why doesn't it look like this? And it's like, well, that could have used a videographer. Or that could, you know, or, you know, oh, we wanted, you know, one of your guys to do this particular skill and then do this. And it's like, do you know how hard that is? Yeah. Do you know how difficult that is to do? You can't just, so yeah.
It sounds like there's a lot that goes on. So just coming back into that and like dealing with briefs, like, are you, I suppose, there throughout the whole journey with the creators that you work with? And you literally almost...
You do everything, mate. Going back to the point, like my day-to-day, or as close as I can give you to a day-to-day, because that changes all the time, is we're pitching, you're going to meetings, and then obviously let's say you're my content creator and a brief comes in for you, I've gone out and successfully managed to, you know, procure a brief. You go through it, you speak to the brand. I'd like to be quite thorough on what the objective is. You know, are there any KPIs? Like if I give you the stats at the end of this and you get X and you wanted Y, are you going to be annoyed with me? Because some of them aren't very forthcoming with it. So it's about understanding what the objective is, making sure as well that they have picked the right person. Now, ultimately, like, I want all of my guys to get every single job for a brief, but sometimes you have to say, right, who's going to be best for this?
The right demographic.
You have to. And it's quite a hard one to navigate, because I think sometimes some brands are still quite, you know, it might be like, we need a man and a woman for this, or we need a guy from this background and someone from that background. It's like, great. Why? Mm. Like, tell me why. So it's a really hard one to navigate. So there's a lot of a bit of a criteria before we work with people. I also like to meet people, especially if it's the first time that we've worked with them, just to ensure that we're on the same page. And like, you know, you just want to, it's a personal job. Let's have a chat. You know
what I mean? When you're working with brands, who is it you're typically working with from the brand side? Is it like brand partnerships, sponsorships?
I would say more often than not with what we do, it's typically an agency. So if you take like an agency that I used to work for, like Scene Connects, they would approach you or you would approach them and they might work with X amount of brands. So an agency might work with two brands, they might work with 10 brands. So they're actually usually your best bet in terms of just scope. Because if you do a good job with one brand, they might go, oh, let's rebook for other one that's in a completely different vertical. So in those instances, you'll deal with, you know, account managers, account execs, account directors, brands direct. The job titles might differ. It might be like marketing manager, it might be communications, PR as well. Like it's such a broad spectrum of people. Mm-hmm. You do it for long enough, you kind of realize you can kind of pick out who you should speak to, but it varies, but
it sounds like there's a lot to do with every bit of talent. You've mentioned the fact that you manage 10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for anybody who's listening to this, like, understanding workloads, how many pieces of talent typically would you manage, or does it vary based on like size the talent scope?
I think it varies. I mean, like, I'm quite lucky in a sense that like I have a team that kind of help me with everything. I'm the main point of contact with all of my talent, and have been, you know, throughout the sort of whole duration of their journey. And I think it's important I maintain that with them. I know them, like I try and try and get to know as much about how they operate as much as possible. Ten's punchy. I'm not going to lie, but you can make it work. And I think where we have it consolidated within sport, a lot of people have identified me and the business as that. And it's not to say that because of that, you can take your foot off the pedal, but it's like what I was saying earlier, when you are new as a talent manager and you're trying to do six or seven different things or six or seven different verticals, if people go, Hayden's the sport guy, it does make your life a lot easier.
And you can be efficient.
And I'm telling you, like when I really honed in on that and when I really started to notice it, you know, earlier this year, I was like, wow, this is a completely different ball game now. Mm. So it makes your life so much easier. But the challenges, I mean, yeah, so going back to your point, like you'll deal with the briefs, you'll deal with the contracts, the negotiations, you know, the managing the campaign even, you know, getting the stats, you know, going to the events. I've had to sub in for some of them and help them create their video. Really? Yeah, you do that's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, you do all sorts. You're as all in or all out as they want you to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like with everything that you do, like there must be some challenging talent, right? Or some challenging brands. Can you talk through like a challenge that you've overcome without naming anyone?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, yes, it's the most challenging job I've ever done in my life, like comfortably. And ultimately from a talent perspective, you're dealing with people and people's mood can change on a daily basis. Mm. And you've just got to react to it. And like, I'm so lucky now, like the group of people that I manage and the group of people that we manage in the agency are all like, they're all brilliant. They're all great. Everyone has bad days. Christ, they probably think, oh God, Hayden's been a dickhead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like it happens. I've had instances with people in the past that I've managed that have been very, very challenging. And ultimately, like, again, you learn this as a talent manager in terms of your vetting process. You get to know the person before you get to know the content creator, because the two are very different a lot of the time. So I don't tend to have many issues anymore, but I've had problems. And you know,
when you've had problems, like obviously there are going to be content creators, and like you said, you've got a number on your head.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to bring it. Has there ever been a situation where you're like, you know what, the juice isn't worth the squeeze?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We know
I've
going to work.
I've managed people that have made very, very good money, and I could have just, you know, irrespective of not problems that we were having, but you can kind of see the attitude is just not really there. And eventually it's not just going to blow up in their face. It's going to blow up in mine. It's going to blow up in the business. And it's hard when I take quite a no BS sort of approach to it. Like it might not be working for you either, but like, if it's not working, if I think the character isn't there, I'm not doing it. I don't want to do it. And it's hard. So, it's really difficult to do that.
And just like, you know, talking about like breaking relationships, when you sign talent, like, is it like year-long contracts, 2-year-long contracts? Is it kind of ad hoc? How does it typically work?
Every agency is different. So our agency, for example, we have sort of like a 3-month introductory period. It's a good amount of time for them to get to know us to get to know them, us to pitch them and get their name out there. And if we're by the end of that happy and they're happy, we roll with it for a year. But it's almost like if you wanted to leave a job, you know, you give a notice period so on and so forth. But then some agencies will lock people in for, I've seen it for like 2-3 years. It's insane. And in my opinion, because if someone wants to leave,
why would you keep
them there?
Yeah, it's mad.
It just gets so messy.
That sounds like P. Diddy, man.
Yes.
I'm just hearing some P. Diddy.
So it's just, but like, you know, you obviously, listen, we all want to do a good job. So like, I like to think, you know, let's have fun. Let's make sure we're doing right. Let's see where we're at. And it's working for us. Like I don't want to, and I know the business doesn't want to tie people into long-term contracts.
Yeah.
You know, if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, which is going above and beyond anyway, then more often than not, they'll want to stay. But going back, the more challenging part of the job is not necessarily with talent. Obviously, like, I mean, going to that point, like I was explaining it to someone the other day, when you manage a lot of people, it's always like playing a game of like whack-a-mole.
Yeah,
you deal with a problem and then another one.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of, you know, the agencies and the brands we work with, like they're so important to us, but our industry is so desirable to work in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the turnover in staff at a lot of agencies is quite high because some people might want to, you know, they might look at it as an easy job. They might go, oh, I get to work with celebrities or I get to do this. But if there's a lot of hard, there's a lot of difficult stuff to do. And you can tell sometimes when you're dealing with people and you're like, I don't think you really have a grasp on what you're doing. Yeah, exactly. And it's just, it's really jarring. And I think you get to a point in your career where, like, for example, when I was maybe a bit younger, I would just go, all right, fine. Whereas now it's a bit like, come on, I need more from you. Like you've got a job to do, I've got a job to do. Let's find the way to make this happen, sort of thing. So that can be quite challenging.
You mentioned like just a while back that, yeah, like you have the 3-month introductory where you put, you know, talent out there. Do you guys only work with established people? Like, what is the smallest sized following that requires an alpha talent?
So this is like what I was saying earlier, like there are agencies that will possibly only work with people that have X amount of followers or whatever. And I understand that because obviously for us, we have to look at the numbers. Like you have to, like, you know, what are your average views? Like, what's your engagement rate? You know, so on and so forth. But what I'm really grateful of is I love working with emerging talent. Like that was kind of what I wanted to do. And we work with a myriad of people that are very well established, people like Tommy, to people like Nancy, who I manage. Still very well established, but in terms of the vanity metrics, I think Tommy's got 5.3 million followers and Nancy on her main platform has got around sort of 25,000. Yeah. So, but that 25,000 people are there for women's sport and they love it and they are tuning in for it on a daily basis and there is value in that.
So it's a very engaged 25,000.
It's engaged, whereas you know, in some instances you might get someone that's possibly gone on a show or, you know, might have really heavily pivoted their content and their audience was built, you know, let's say you have been on a dating show and you're an objectively attractive man, 70, 80% of your audience are 18 to 25 year old women. And then you come off and go, I want to work with Hugo Boss. You go, no, I'm afraid that's quite difficult. So you have to get stuck into that. You know, and it's an interesting one to navigate.
How do you change the demographics in your analytics? And the reason I say that is because I've been looking at my analytics.
Tell me.
And like I was on TikTok and I was like, it's like 92% male. I'm like, whoa, I didn't know that.
The man
did. I'm like, well, yeah. I'm like, the man did work.
Yeah.
It's like, what, man, they've got to put food on the table. I'm like, I didn't know. Like, is there stuff that you can do to like switch it? Or is it like, it serves who, the algorithm serves who it serves?
Yeah, it's... I've trying to second guess the algorithm is a nightmare. It ebbs and it flows and it changes all the time. It depends on what you want. If you are trying to reach, you know, more women or more men, you might try and look at what is topical for people of a certain gender or of a certain age at the time. You know, I've had the challenge with someone that I manage at the moment who, you know, had come from a television background and is trying to transition into football. So we spoke about a plan to try and, you know, generate an audience that responds and appreciates that sort of content. And the best thing you can do is not panic when you start losing followers, because you will. But like, if you've lost 1,000 followers, good. Because they're not going to help your engagement or they're not there for what you're trying to do. So it can be quite a slow process. Some people have done it very, very successfully. It's hard because it's like anything, you want quick validation, you want that dopamine hit, you know, why am I getting less likes? Why am I getting less views? You have to just persevere with it. You know, if that's what you want to do, like that's what it's going to take.
And just on that, like I had somebody on the podcast recently and, you know, we were talking about it. Yeah, when it comes to creating content, even myself, like it really is like a full-time job. I think people see people on TikTok and they think, oh, you throw it up after 10 minutes,
mate,
I'm famous, bish, bash, bosh.
I admire everyone that we work with because I see the work that goes into it. And like you experience it. Like I experience it on so many different levels because I'm doing it with all of them.
Yeah.
So I see the level of work. I see the late nights. I see the early mornings, you know. I've been on the phone when they've, you know, gaffer, I've had enough of this.
It's a real job.
I don't want to do it anymore. And it's hard because it's so, it is so mentally taxing. it really is, and I see it. But like the rewards are so good, you know. These guys get to a certain point. You're self-employed. You can, you know, you get to travel the world. You get to work with some really cool brands. But it can be really tough. And I think there is a common misconception with our industry, whether it's what managers do or whether what talent do, that it is very easy. It's like, Well, they just do that. And I think it's this country, mate. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Like,
get me cancelled, but what you're about to say.
No. Where I'm going with this is in America, for example, there's a very kind of culture where it's like, we want, if you do it, we all do it. Yeah, whereas here, there's an element of, I wish that was me.
Yeah.
Or like, and it's, we've all probably done it at some point, but like, I really do feel it sometimes here. And I think we are getting away from it a little bit, but like there's still certain shifts that need to happen in order for, like, you know, content creator, influencer marketing, however you want to phrase it, has been around for a while now, but there are still...
people take the piss out of them in the UK.
Yeah, mate.
In the US.
Massively. Because it's still... I don't know what it is that it's not... It's a lucrative industry. Yeah. Like, these brands are not operating in this space for a laugh.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like, oh, well, it's just, you know... I'll give you an example. When I sign someone that hasn't had a manager, that has worked with a brand, you know, I might turn around to them and go, right, we're speaking to the brand about doing this job. Like, I have an idea in my head based off of your stats or whatever it might be, or the ask of the job, where we should be pricing it. But obviously I'll just ask, like, well, what have you charged them before? Just so I have a stepping off point. Or what, they've never paid me before.
Oh.
Okay. So then you speak to the brand and go, look, right, this is what it's going to cost. And obviously agents or managers get this reputation of being these vampires that just want money. It's like, well, actually, no, I just want my client to get what is fair. And I've had arguments with people. We're like, well, Hayden, I can't believe it. We've never paid them before. And it's like, oh, Leo, we work with them very early on, so we would expect them to just do it for free. It's like, if you hired an intern at a university and then you said, look, we're going to give you a full-time job, you can give them a salary.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it happens a lot where I think, you know, sometimes the relationship can get abused a little bit.
So, and on that, like, to talent who, yeah, maybe they've sourced some deals, but like you said, they're free. How do you help them break away from, free to actually earning some income? Or what would your advice be, I suppose?
My advice would be, don't be afraid to ask the question. Like, this is even for creators that aren't managed. Money in this country is such a taboo thing to talk about. Like, 100%. You don't want, you know, and I've had it, oh, Hayden, I just feel uncomfortable. And obviously that's why we're there. Like, we ask the uncomfortable questions, even though it shouldn't be an uncomfortable, it's business. Mm-hmm. You know, the amount of times I've had to like ask, like, what's the budget for this? And it's like this guessing game. It's really weird. But my advice would just be, if you want to transition from something that's, you know, unpaid to paid, come with a bit of a strategy. So I've had it so many times with some of the most successful and arguably the most fun campaigns and ambassadorships that I've worked on, where we have done stuff for free, but we've gone to the brand and said, right, we've been doing this and this is our plan and this is what we want to do. You have to have a plan. And ultimately, like, you also, my job is to figure out when you have to pull back, if the brand are maybe
taking the mic.
Yeah. For lack of a better way of putting it.
But are there a lot of freebies that go around as like tasters then with content creators?
Yeah, of course there is. Of course there is. And do you know what? Like, we don't stand in their way of it. Like, we try and weigh it up. You know, if you look at it as different pillars of what's going to help your content creator, you have the money side of it. It's like, right, I want to make sure that you can pay your bills at the end of the month. I want to make sure that you can buy that car that you want or invest that money in the business that you want to do. So here are the brands in pot A that are not just for the money, but like, we know they're paying and we can obviously provide them something. It might not be, you know, like your favorite brand or whatever it might be, however you want to frame it, but it's like, there's a good understanding, there's a good symbiosis there between you and that brand. Then you have a brand that you love, like, you want to be part of it. And it's not to say that you're going to take a hit to work with them, but like, you weigh it up. Is this going to help me launch my career into becoming a podcast host? Is this going to help me get on television? Is this going to help me start interviewing, you know, people at the World Cup final? And then you look at things that are maybe a little bit more, sort of intrinsic, you know, like what do you like to do? You know, even things like charities, for example. Like, I think personally, it's quite good to leverage your platform to try and give something back now 100%. And again. So you have various different things. What's going to get you paid? What's going to get your name out there? And what's going to make you happy? And I think that's what we try and find a balance between that.
I love that. And just as you were talking, like, let's say you've got a brand and they've got budget, but the budget, like, you've got your pool of 10.
Yeah.
They want someone, but their budget is for it's for pot B or pot C, like you say.
Uh-huh.
Do you still pitch to their number one person saying, look, they can't afford you, but
no, options. Like, it's not like saying, don't take no for an answer, but like, if someone's come to you and gone, right, we only have this much budget, but you know the person that they want is out of their price range. Obviously, it's negotiations a lot of the time. They're trying to get a good deal, you're trying to get a good deal, and the idea is you meet in the middle. But like, but also, like, this is why we work with the talent consistently to say ideas. Like, I try and keep my talent in the loop as much with conversations as I can without trying to, you know, put a target on my back. But it's like, right, if I'm speaking to someone, like, start having a, you know, for example, if a brand's doing something around the Champions League in a couple of months, I'll be like, start having a think now about how you might do this. So you have stuff ready to provide them. So if they say, oh, we've got this budget, be like, do you know what, actually one of the guys has been chatting to me and he's thinking about doing this. So we've already done the work. Can we maybe try and leverage a little bit of additional budget out of it, whatever that might look like?
Sorry to jump in there. I've got another question, and you might not be able to answer this, but to the talent manager who's listening to this, like, is there like a standard going rate for a project?
No.
Okay.
No. In a word, there isn't, because everything's different.
And is it priced at like you say, KPIs? So is it like eyeballs? If we get this many views, you get paid.
Yeah, I mean, ones like that are quite techie, but like, if you're looking at it as, you know, the more common briefs that I get, a brand might come to you and say, right, Hayden, I want a football content creator for this brief. I want them to create 2 TikToks, 3 Instagram story frames. It's a month exclusivity from competitors. So let's just say it's Nike and you can't work with Adidas or New Balance or Puma within that period of time. Yeah. Cool. They might be putting paid spend behind it. So you need to know what that paid spend is so that you can then calculate how much of a percentage to essentially put onto it, because they're going to be, you know, mass broadcasting that asset to people. So those are just a few things that you'd be negotiating. There's all kinds of things, you know, event attendances for events. You know, obviously the price that one talent might typically charge for a TikTok might be very different to what they would charge for a long form video on YouTube, because there's a lot more production value that goes into it.
Yeah.
So there isn't a one size fits all to how you price people. And it's something that you have to remain agile on with your creators. You have to have that conversation with them. Perhaps you're not getting work and you need to understand, are we pricing it too high? Are people just don't have the budgets? Or should we maybe start looking at pitching you on a different platform? Like, all kinds of different things. But it's something that's really worth, you know, I don't think it's wise for talent managers or talent that manage themselves or agencies to go, this is our number and we're not straying from it. Because there's always a solution.
Yeah.
There is always a solution. If a brand can't afford it now, they might be able to. Just don't shoot yourself in the foot, basically.
Yeah. Have you noticed any emerging trends in the industry, whether it be content creation as a whole or like specifically with creators?
Trends in terms of like content trends, they come and they go so fast. Yeah. Like, honestly, some of them I don't understand. But more broadly, like, what brands are looking for, and I think this is obviously contingent to the space that I work in, so many of them are now looking to work within sport. And I don't know if it's always been like that, but it really feels like it at the moment. So many more brands are sponsoring major sporting events. So many brands, their ambassadors are athletes. You know, you look at Jack Grealish, I think it was, like, with Gucci. Yeah, like these people, these footballers as well, they're relatable. And I think what a lot of brands do is they need talent that can give them the most value for money. So if you've got brand X that's partnered with this footballer, and part of your agreement with them is, right, we've got Jack to do a shoot for 15 minutes, but we need to hire a content creator to interview. Who's gonna provide the best value in that 15 minutes? Because if you, if you cock it up, like it's so a lot of them are, they have their ear to the ground a lot more, and I think there's a bit more of a case. I always try and say the creators I work with, they're not content creators, they're creative directors. We want to put them in that position. So I think a lot more brands, there was a sort of period in time where ambassadorships were kind of slowing down a little bit, and I'm beginning to notice the sentiment around it changing. Okay. With a little bit of elbow grease. So that as a trend is something that's kind of re-entering it.
And then you mentioned the fact that everyone, you know, misconception is that people think like it's easy. Mm-hmm. Are there any other misconceptions about the industry that come to mind?
From a talent manager perspective, that you just man the inbox, you know, it's like, oh, he's just sat there just like responding to emails. No, that is not it.
Yeah.
As nice as that would be. That's one. Yeah, that it's a lot easier. It's a lot more glamorous than it is. Don't you have hot periods? I mean, like I myself, I've had a great month. I'm like so grateful for it. Like managed to send like a lot of the guys out to the Euros, managed to go out to a couple of games myself. You know, we gutted about the end result, but you know, that's one week. Yeah. And then the other week I'm up to my eyeballs in contracts. And they suck, but it's part of the job. You have to do it, and you have to do everything with vim. You know, you've got to take it all seriously.
And on that, like, what would you say are like skills you've noticed amongst all of the best talent managers that you've worked with?
You've got to be present. So when I noticed things really changing for me, and it's about having work-life balance, or it's about, you know, what do you want to get out of the job? So for me, it's when talent get invited to events, it might be a game, it might be a gifting suite, whatever, like go with them. Go there, because not only are they going, Hayden's come with like fair, like and you're building that relationship. You let them crack on, you speak to the brand, you tag team it, but also there are other creators there. There are two lads that I signed, right? So it was in January. Through TikTok, we were invited to do like a media day with Burnley. And at the time, I had...
Sonny Burnley.
Yeah, Burnley. Yeah, God, that was a drop. Costa, you know, and again, this is what I mean. So this wasn't paid. Yeah. So this was to get everyone up to Burnley. So I drove everyone to Burnley.
Yeah.
And left at 5 a.m. in the morning. Because I was like, this is important that we do this. Because of the four of us football creators that go in there, it's the first time they had the opportunity to create together. Mm-hmm. In the time that I'd had them, and I was like, that's important for people to see that. So we went, Charlie and Mikey, who I now manage, were there, the Augie boys, like brilliant content creators, obviously, like they amplify what we do so well. I mean, like everyone I work with is amazing. And Charlie and Mikey were there, and they were with another agency, but you know, all of a sudden it's been like, you manage these guys, do you? You know, and Charlie and Mikey with us now.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to be present. People see you, and they, you know, they respect what you're doing. So I say you have to be present. You've got to figure out what sort of manager you are. Are you going to be a money man, which is great, or are you going to be a man manager? Like, you're going to get into the nitty gritty, you know, are you going to put your arm around them sort of thing, or are you going to be somewhere in between? You kind of have to sit in a little, in a pot, I think.
I love that. And like, to the listener who, you know, they've listened to this podcast, they've heard about the industry, like if there was an immediate action they could take after this to, you know, try and start forging a pathway into this industry,
mm-hmm.
like what would you say should be that immediate
for people
action?
That want to be talent managers?
So
I've had this conversation with people that I've loosely sort of mentored through LinkedIn, and just said, look, what do you like, what do you enjoy? If it's sport or if it's fashion, identify those businesses, and just, I mean, again, it's trivial, but connect with those people, you know, study them, like figure out as well, like make the job for yourself. You know, if you can see a vulnerability within that business, message them and be like, oh, have you seen this content creator? I think they're quite good. Like, might be worth a punt. I get it from people sometimes, and I really appreciate some people DM me going, have you had a look at this lad?
Yeah.
Or something like that. So is that events, obviously going to events is great. It's chicken and egg thing. It's obviously easier to go to a lot of events when you're in it. It's, you know, apart from, there are obviously events that you can pay to go and network in, and, you know, I used to do it quite a lot in different businesses. But yeah, if you are in and around it, if you're, you know, connecting with content creators, or you're connecting with managers or whatever it might be, just ask. Just be like, is anything coming up? Can I help with any? I don't know.
Yeah, no. This has all been great advice. we're coming to the end before we get into the quickfire round. Just got a few more questions. First one, like, sounds like you do a lot. You manage a lot.
Mm.
Long days.
Yeah.
Like, do you have any productivity hacks?
Productivity hacks. I just like to, I like to start the day on the front foot. I like to try and get up early and go to the gym and just do my own stuff, because once that clock hits 9 o'clock, it's like an onslaught.
Yeah.
And it's just noise. Yeah. And you have to just be prepared for it, and you have to just be in a good headspace, and you have to just, you know, put what's going on in your situation aside and be able to deal with that. So the best productivity hack that I've got is just keeping your head clear, mm-hmm. whether that's by reading, whether that's by meditating, whether it's by going for whatever it is that you do, make sure that you take the time to do it. Because I notice the days that I don't, I feel very groggy, and I'm, you know, maybe a little bit more, you know, antsy. So that's maybe a less than trivial.
That's great. Do you have a good work-life balance? It sounds like it's very blurred.
It comes and goes. Like, I really do try to. It can be quite difficult because you know, we're not out here saving lives, but like you are working, and you are required more often than not. But again, my best advice as a talent manager is be honest with your talent. If you're complaining that your talent has maybe messaged you at midnight or has done something at the weekend, if you haven't told them not to do it, that is kind of your fault.
Yeah. So set the boundaries.
Yeah, set the boundaries. Exactly. Set the boundaries. But yeah, work-life balance.
Working on it. And then, yeah, my final question is like, where do you see yourself in the next 5 and 10 years? I call this the manifest corner. Manifest it.
I'm going to go with 5 years because the idea of 10 stresses me out. So I've made no secret about the fact that I would love to do this, you know, for myself one day. And I'm very grateful for the conditions that I've been able to learn and sort of hone my craft. So it'll either be that, or I'll go, I'm just going to go work behind a bar and just call it day. No, but honestly, like, I love what I do, and I would love to, you know, continue doing what I do with Alpha and then take it to the next level and then sort of see where I'm at and really kind of harness this sport stuff. Cause I think it's a really good space. And there's a lot of good stuff going on. So yeah.
I love it. Hayden, this has been such a sick conversation. We've got a quick fire round. Are you ready?
Hit me.
Here we go.
All right.
I'm drawing for the phone. Yeah, here we go. I like this. Small engaged audience or large passive following?
Small engaged audience.
Viral content or loyal community?
Loyal community.
Money or happiness?
Manappiness.
specialize in one platform or diversify across many?
Diversify.
Business savvy creator or purely creative?
Business savvy.
Okay, business savvy. Grow a new creator or grow an established one?
Grow a new one.
Love that. Would you rather travel to the past or future?
Future.
Who has it easier, men or women?
Men.
And dream dinner guest?
Peter Crouch.
That's a good one. The
he's,
Sam Rat.
He's got stories and he's got jokes and he'd be fun.
Yeah. Have you seen his documentary on Amazon Prime?
No, I don't think so.
Fake me later. God. Hayden, this has been such a great and insightful conversation. We do have a closing tradition on this podcast.
Yes.
Knowing everything you know now and with everything that you've been through, what advice would you give your younger self, and would you still be doing the same thing?
So to answer your first point, what advice would I give is be deliberate in everything that you do in your life, whether it's work or with your friendships or your relationships or how you look after yourself. It all has to count. Obviously enjoy yourself, but like, be very deliberate with what you're doing. Would I still do what I do now? Yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
Yeah, absolutely, mate.
Hayden, this has been such a sick conversation, bro. Where can people find you?
Professionally, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm also I use my Instagram quite a lot to kind of showcase what I'm doing and what the business is doing. So yeah, Hayden CC on Instagram as well. But yeah, those are two, LinkedIn and Instagram.
Sick. And guys, if you've made it to this point in the podcast, thank you so much. You know what to do. Make sure to like, comment, share, do the thing. Look, we've had talent managers. We're going to get the talent on. We're interviewing everybody, guys. So just make sure you let us know who you want next. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Over and out.